Oh, intermission.
No, it's halftime.
McDaniel will end it in style. Arkansas is in hog heaven. They've won their first ever national championship.
Still missing your free throws, Wes? Who cares? They don't show free throws in SportsCenter.
Here's Washington. On the drive.
I don't know if he'll make any change, but I figure it's time for me to start playing ball.
And they do it in stunning fashion over the number two team in the country.
Fact is, I missed this shot. I walk away. I'm still a chump.
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.
Tried to be optimistic going into yesterday's show. Tried every which way, including up, to come up with reasons why Arkansas wouldn't just be a better team and a better program with Kelly Bryant, but that it might actually be a good landing place for him. But reality ends up kicking you in the face and punching you in the gut every once in a while. And just like on the opening that Ty Richardson put together for us, yes, you can put makeup on a pig, but it's still a pig. And you definitely know for sure that Arkansas was not the best place for Kelly Bryant to move forward in his collegiate career. It would have been great for Arkansas, but nope, not going to happen. And happy birthday, Chad Morris. Way to turn 50. I feel for the Razorback head coach, Ty Richardson, because that's, you know, I'm sure he got plenty of nice gifts and all sorts of hugs and birthday wishes. I hope he had some great birthday cake if he likes cake. I hope somebody took care of him, because the gift I think he was hoping for, and that everybody else as far as Razorback fandom was hoping for as a 50th birthday present, well, it, and I guess if you were to look at it in the terms of a holiday coming up, he got a big old fat lump of coal in his birthday stocking from Kelly Bryant yesterday. Great relationship for the two of them. I'm sure moving forward, they still might have a friendly text every once in a while, but that relationship won't be as close as it could have been. And maybe it wasn't quite as close as everybody in Arkansas thought it was, because that was the thing that we thought would draw him to Arkansas. It turns out he picked the school tie that probably surprises everybody when you looked at the schools he was just considering. I think when we end up looking at the decision, it does make sense, but nobody would have expected that Missouri is the landing spot for the top free agent in college football for this year.
Yeah, it's just not a dominant football school by any stretch of the means. I got tweeted at yesterday because I retweeted that picture of someone mistaking a former Missouri staff member for Kelly Bryant, and I was just joking, look, the first time Kelly Bryant went to Mizzou, they didn't even know who he was. And I got tweeted at, well, Mizzou is a true football school. And I thought about that for a sec. And I know Arkansas has been down for quite some time now. You haven't had a quality season since 2011. And I know that really the majority of Arkansas wins have come in the 1960s. That was really when they were at their prowess. That's when they were a football powerhouse, was the mid to late 1960s. But Phil, Missouri is not a powerhouse by any means, and it just seemed odd when we saw the report that Gus Malzahn had an in-home visit with Kelly Bryant not 2 days ago, not 3 days ago, but yesterday on the day of his decision, and the report came out from AL.com that Jarrett Stidham was foregoing his senior season and plans to enter the NFL draft. It just seemed odd to me that he still chose Mizzou. Now, he must have a really good relationship with Derek Dooley and Barry Odom. Dooley's going to be his OC. That relationship is just perplexing to me, Phil. I don't know the dynamic there. Now, if it pans out, it pans out. I'm just curious to see what unfolds with this decision moving forward.
I think that there's no doubt that Auburn and Missouri provided much more roster depth than Arkansas does. I mean, you don't even really need to pay close attention to SEC football to know that. But what separates the two of them is coaching stability. I mean, you end up with the same offensive coordinator in Missouri that they've had the last couple of years, and Derek Dooley. Barry Odom is a head coach that, for me, I mean, he's got that program in the right direction, and that's a guy who's got some job security right now. You can't say the same about Gus Malzahn. You can't say the same about whomever the offensive coordinator is going to be, because they're now searching for another one. So I think that, you know, if all things being equal as far as roster depth is concerned, and the fact that you know, Kelly Bryant knows he's going to be the starter in either place, that maybe the stability of the coaches has a little bit more to do with it. And the expectations that are placed on the team at Auburn aren't quite, you know, are much higher than the expectations that are placed on the team at Missouri year by year. So in this case, you're Kelly Bryant's not going to be blamed for the destruction of the Auburn Tigers in the way that I don't feel he would ever be blamed if Missouri's season goes south. And it really, Missouri moving forward probably has a little bit better on the depth chart than Auburn has. And I kind of wonder sometimes if that the lack of the spotlight in Missouri means that it's actually a better place for him to audition for the NFL. Isn't that what this is supposed to be about? Isn't it about auditioning for the next level? It could partially be about college glory and all like that, but if it was really about college glory, he had an opportunity still to perhaps do what Jalen Hurts did and sit back and get that college glory for one more year as a backup. And if Lawrence gets hurt, then you step into the role. But this has to be about it being in the right place to audition for NFL scouts. Maybe Missouri is that place, but we know for a quarterback, Arkansas is not that place next year. Maybe in the future it is, but 2019, it ain't that place.
It was funny yesterday. We're all on Twitter because he said he was announcing it around 6, and it's 6:05, and he still hadn't announced it yet. And everyone's putting out these gifts of, come on, time, when is it coming? And then it finally comes out. If you haven't heard, or if you haven't seen how he announces his recruitment, how he announces commitment via Twitter, here it is.
Kelly Bryant.
Kelly Bryant.
Kelly Bryant.
Kelly Bryant says he's going to transfer. This came after on Sunday.
Test of a man, author unknown. Test of a man is the fight that he makes, the grit that he daily shows, the way that he stands upon his feet and takes life's numerous bumps and blows. A coward can smile, there's not to fear, and nothing's progress bars. But it takes a man to stand and cheer while the other fellow stars. It isn't the victory after all, but the fight that a brother makes. A man when driven against the wall still stands erect and takes the blows of fate. With his head held high, bleeding, bruised, and pale, is the man who win and fate to fight, for he isn't afraid to fail. Test of a man, author unknown.
So you aren't a huge fan of his video, Phil. You thought that you've seen some better high school ones.
I've seen a lot of better high school. But here, you know, the test of a man on a video like that is to actually have a microphone that can pick up your voice.
He came in a little soft. I don't know if one of his friends made the video or whatever. And by the way, I figured out the mystery behind why he committed yesterday. It was because it was his fraternity's Founders Day. That was the whole reasoning behind his commitment. Because we figured out someone on Nikki's message board on Hogbeat was like, oh, he's committed on Chad Morrison's birthday. Maybe there's a coincidence there. And then it turns out his fraternity, Alpha Phi Alpha, who's got alums like Stan Verrett, Sports Center, Martin Luther King Jr., Jesse Owens, it was their Founders Day yesterday. And I also figured out another thing. You know how he always hashtag PUBD? I didn't know what that meant. For the longest time, I was like, what does that mean? And I would search it on Google, and I couldn't find it anywhere. And I asked one of my buddies. He was like, prayers up, blessings down.
You mean that hadn't been on another recruit's Twitter feed? Because you see all these respect my decision, hashtag blessings. I would have thought hashtag PUBD would have been, you know, something amongst the sub-millennial recruiting crowd.
Well, I saw just the abbreviation, though. I didn't see the actual... the acronym defined. So I was looking extensively for it on the internet. I was like, what does this mean? And so I text my friend, and he said, prayers up, blessings down. I was like, oh, that makes sense. So it's always nice when you don't know something, you just be able to text a buddy and be like, hey, what does this mean? And it'll be like, oh. And then even though it's nowhere to be found on the World Wide Web, you can just ask the buddy, and they'll be like, here it is. So that's what that means. But yeah, I'm a big fan of the skydive. You remember that one guy? I think he went to Clemson. It might have been actually Trevor Lawrence, now that I think about it. Maybe not. He skydive out of a plane and announced he was going to Clemson.
That's what I'm talking about. That's okay. Real. That's creativity. Yeah. Not showing a kid who's just bouncing around on a football field by himself throwing passes to nobody. That's not exciting.
I mean, that wasn't bad though. I mean, he did his own thing.
Everybody does things their own way. I guess for the hype that was built up around it, I just guess I expected something with
you
more production value.
With more pizzazz.
I was looking for fireworks. I was looking for sparklers. I was looking for dance routines, something like that. There was nothing entertaining about it. And this whole rigmarole of the last 10 weeks, there's nothing been like this ever before in college football. And it's, look, this is going to be unique because this rule about the four games and you can redshirt, it's going to change. It will change in a year. Maybe there's another player of the star caliber of Bryant that's a junior this year that next year has a redshirt left and decides to leave a program after a couple of games, and then you go through this whole thing again. I've never seen, and college football is a hype-filled sport. I mean, we're talking about the sport where we're arguing about the Heisman Trophy winner, the supposed best player in the sport, an award that's given out in December. We're arguing about watch lists in June. You know, I mean, this is a sport that is built on hype, as football really is. But I've never seen hype around a single player during the season because he's switching programs than I've seen like this. So, again, I would have expected somebody with a little more entertainment value than that. You know, like a halftime show. It wasn't a halftime. It wasn't even worthy of being a pregame to the pregame show.
It's nothing like the content that we put out every day from 12 to 2, right, Phil?
Of course not.
Of course not. All right, so what Mizzou is getting is a player that's 16-2 as a starter at Clemson. He completed 66% of his passes while playing for the Tigers, threw for 3,300 yards, 16 touchdowns, 10 picks. He also had almost 1,000 yards rushing and 15 touchdowns. And kind of the double whammy that came with Kelly Bryant committing to Missouri was Jonathan Nance, Amir, minutes later committing to Missouri, the exact same thing. And not only did he commit, he posted a picture with him and Kelly Bryant in Mizzou uniforms. That's how he committed to Missouri. So Arkansas really got hit double whammy yesterday. And they play each other in Little Rock next year, Phil. Friday after Thanksgiving. That's going to be fun. Kelly Bryant coming down as a starter. We'll see how fans react. I'm sure the reception towards him is not going to be exactly elegant. There might be a few boos and whatnot. But
no, I mean, the deal with Kelly Bryant is one thing. I mean, he wasn't a member of the team.
No, but yeah.
He was not on Arkansas. He never was. It felt like he was part of the team for half a day when he was at his official visit and even called the Hogs. The Jonathan Nance thing is a whole other animal, because what happened to him this year? I mean, this was somebody that was expected to lead the way for a wide receiving core that, to be honest, stunk. I mean, the wide receiving core was terrible.
It was bad.
And you can talk about the thought that the offensive line had trouble blocking and holding their blocks. There's not a lot of time for your quarterbacks to throw. There was never any separation from the wide receivers. What happened to Jonathan Nance? What does Missouri think they're getting? Because he did a complete disappearing act this season until he appears on the postcard photo with Kelly Bryant. So, I mean, that's the guy who I think is going to end up getting a lot of boos at War Memorial Stadium next year. I'm sure Bryant will have plenty coming his way. But as far as someone that was on the team, that you had a lot of expectations for this season, and for that is one position that was, I mean, the quarterbacks had their rough moments. The running backs did too, little injury problems, a little putting it on the ground. Your tight ends were your best offensive position. The offensive line was broken from the start. But the wide receivers probably were the most disappointing of all of the positions. And Jonathan Nance's disappearing act is at the top of that list.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting. I heard Bo talking about it yesterday. Not only did you lose Kelly Bryant to Missouri, but you also lost a quarterback to Derek Dooley. And just to give you some stats, Phil, the transition from Josh Heupel, who's now the UCF coach, who was the Missouri offensive coordinator two seasons ago, Drew Locke's passing yards, passing touchdowns, and QB rate all went down in 2018 compared to what is Azur Heupel. Now, you can debate that's because of the offense, how they switched from more of an up-tempo spread offense under Heupel to transitioning to more of a pro style under Derek Dooley. But I find a hard time believing that a quarterback coach and a and offensive coordinator in Derek Dooley is more of a draw than Chad Morris with his credentials that he can just roll out there. Like, Locke was there already when Dooley arrived. Chad Morris transformed Taj Boyd, and he probably would have done the same with Deshaun Watson and Kelly Bryant if he would have had the chance. I mean, he's got a pedigree off the charts when it comes to quarterbacks. That, I think, is a little perplexing to me, that specific hinge, that specific example, how someone could choose a guy like Derek. And now there's almost every other aspect points in favor of Mizzou, Phil. But when it comes to pure quarterback position, Chad Morris has to have the edge over Barry Odom, who's a defensive-minded guy, and Derek Dooley, right?
It would make sense. Yeah, I agree with you, no doubt. Although Drew Locke's draft position probably isn't suffering because he's going to be one of the top two guys that goes. And last year's draft class probably a little bit stronger for quarterbacks, but I think, you know, again, that's what it's about. It's about it, development is definitely part of it. I think Chad's history offensively and developing quarterbacks, but they also comparing what he did with Taj Boyd at Clemson to what you're dealing with at Arkansas is such a different thing. And that's also why, I mean, some of the numbers here with Bryant at Clemson are pretty underwhelming. They really are. But I mean, but you're dealing with somebody that was on one of the top four teams in the country for the year that he was their starting quarterback. Part of the reason that they were top four presumably was because of him, because he is the starting quarterback. But think of all the talent on that defense. Think of all the talent that he was throwing to or handing the ball off to. And now try to compare that to what you've got at Arkansas. And it's just, those numbers would not look quite as pretty, even though they don't even look very pretty right now. They'd look much worse next season. So, and that's the thing. I mean, you know, Bryant's numbers really look pedestrian for a quarterback. He's going to go to a team that's really going to lean on him, but also have the parts where he can maybe look the part moving forward. So, I mean, it sucks losing a recruiting battle to Missouri in such a high-profile way. Because, I mean, let's face it here, Missouri now, in many ways, has a little bit of an ownership stake on the Arkansas football program.
Yep.
You're getting kids from Fayetteville that are ending up in Missouri, at Mizzou, winning games against you, scoring touchdowns against Arkansas, getting blown out back-to-back years, lost four out of the last five to Missouri, and when that school was announced as your cross division foe year by year, I remember the chuckles, I remember the sneers, and I understood those too, because from the outside looking in, and even, you know, from the SEC's perspective, from the inside looking out, Missouri was an odd fit to this entire conference, and it's an odd fit to be a team that right now has out-recruited Arkansas to the point of getting this top quarterback and beating the brains in 2 years in a row.
He did get some good news yesterday. Looks like Scooter Harris is coming back. He had this to tweet yesterday after Kelly Bryant chose Missouri. He said, "But for all the long faces tonight, I got another year in me, so let's rock it out."
And way to go, Scooter.
Yeah, and
coming to the rescue with a little happiness.
And you can read that in any way you want, but that seems like to me, and the guys have their right to change their minds, and we've seen that happen before across the board in college football and other collegiate athletics, but that just seems like for me that he's going to stay. And you also, I saw Rakeem Boyd tweet out, "Let's work with what we have here." So I think some of the guys in that locker room feel like they can improve this offseason, they can get better on a year two in Chad Morris, and hopefully get this team to a bowl game. But you can't act like yesterday wasn't a blow for the Razorbacks program, Phil.
There's no doubt. And I wonder what Scoot's tweet would have been, because you know he had another tweet planned if Bryant's decision goes in Arkansas's direction. It would be a real celebration tweet. But he's trying to help everybody feel a little bit better, because he's one of the team favorites. But at least you got him coming back. What was the Randy Ramsey thing, though? I mean, that his tweet really came off very negatively towards the coaching staff.
It was a little cryptic, and it can be taken a number of ways. I took it as him negatively talking about the coaching staff, and he said, "Y'all not about to blame this team, though, because it definitely wasn't the talent this year." This was the easiest schedule I had since I got here since 2014. 20-plus players left the program for a reason. Y'all so smart, I'm pretty sure y'all can figure the rest out. I took that, just like you did, as him being critical of the coaching staff. Now, he could have framed that a different way, and it could have come across how we're interpreting it. But that's just how I took it. And I think that's how many other people took it. And you wonder if that's what he meant. We're not going to know until we ask him. And
he's left it up for everybody else to think about. Yeah. I mean, that when you tweet something like that, you're leaving it for everybody else to decipher what you mean. So I mean, that's why these cryptic tweets do no good either way. Then it just ends up embarrassing everybody. He's got to let everybody know what he means here. But it really comes across as being awfully critical towards the coaches. Hey, maybe the talent level on the front line didn't look like a 2-10 team. The depth on this team, though, when you sit back and get a look, the depth on it, that is a 2-10. Well, you are what you are at this point. I know a lot of folks thought you should beat Ole Miss the way you had that game in hand. You should beat Colorado State the way you had that game in hand. Losing to Vanderbilt is something that shouldn't really ever happen. But hey, those are games that you did lose. They're 2-10. I think a lot of it was because of a lack of talented depth. So, I mean, Randy can say one thing. I think that ends up, maybe it ends up being both talent, and a little bit goes on the coaches too. They can't get off scot-free. That's one thing that we've been talking about.
Yeah, you can't just walk into a game, walk into a season with little to no talent and expect results that you're simply not going to get. I think they got their just desserts, Phil. And that's not 100% on the players. It's on former coaches. It's on a lot of different people. A lot of blame can be spread around this football team.
Man, what a bummer, though, really, because we thought we'd have a little optimism today. There is no optimism as far as this Wednesday is concerned for Arkansas football. It's all in next year's recruiting class, which does not include Kelly Bryant.
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast. Follow the guys on Twitter at PhilElsonPXP and at Ty Sports Radio.
Beard ahead to Gafford. How about a windmill? Let's put a little exclamation point on it. The Hogs are moving on.
Luke Bonfield is in studio, and so is Mike Bernal, too. Former Arkansas Razorbacks. Of course, you know, you're never really a former Razorback. You're just a Razorback that moved on to do other things like play professional baseball. So we'll do the Missouri Arkansas football talk in a little bit. Luke, Mike, I'm so sorry I can't be there in studio with you guys today. Otherwise, I'd probably still be hugging you. So thanks so much for showing up. How you been?
Been great. I'm excited to be here, man. I haven't been to Fayetteville in the last little over a year, so it's great to be back and see everybody wearing the Razorback gear. It's been a while since I've been back, so it's nice.
Well, Luke's been in Fayetteville for a good long while now. You've been coaching one of Bubba's teams, right, with the Arkansas prospects?
Yeah, I've been coaching up there in Springdale at Next Level, Bubba Carpenter's place, and you know, that's actually why Mike's in town. We're doing a little camp up there with Carson Shaddy on Friday and Sunday, so it should be fun.
Okay, so let's get into that. Let's visit about the camp first. So where is the camp, and how can people get involved with it?
Okay, so the camp is at Next Level in Springdale, Arkansas. We've set up an email for people to sign up. We're going to go ages 8 and up. They can sign up at swinghogs@yahoo.com. Send in their information there, and we can get squared away from there. We're going to go Friday night from 4 to 9. And then we've also got a full day Sunday. So we're really looking forward to that, have a bunch of people out there, and us be able to give back to the community that you know, did so much for us.
What are the ages that you guys are allowing at this camp?
We're going 8 and up, so if you want to drive on up, you can get in there too.
Oh, sweet! I can use a little work on my swing. Now, that's a couple of the things. It's a full camp. You guys teaching everything.
We're mainly focusing on hitting and the hitting aspect of it. You know, that's kind of what me, Carson, and Mike made our living on, and so it's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of really good stuff we're teaching.
you hit on something. You know, and Mike, you know this as well. Carson knew this because they always had to find a position for Carson because of his bat. You know, you, Luke, moved outfield to DH because of, they wanted your bat in that lineup. Mike, you know what they said. When you can swing it, when you can hit that ball, they're going to find a place for you, right?
Absolutely. And it's funny, you know, every coach will let you know that if you can hit, they'll find a place for you to play. So, you know, primarily my thing was defense, you know. So I've always been great at defense. So it was something that, not that I didn't have to work at, I worked very hard at it, but, you know, something, baseball or hitting was always something I had to focus on, and felt like I've done a great job of developing over time and being open-minded and learning. And Luke was actually a great part of that. Him and I roomed together his first year on campus, and it was, our room was nonstop hitting, you know, showing each other videos, talking about swinging and hitting. And to me, that was one of the biggest developments that I've had, was rooming with Luke and talking hitting and growing in that aspect.
So, Mike, one of the things I loved about last year's team was that balance between the youthful exuberance, you know, of guys like Heston Kerstad and Casey Martin, and the guys who had balanced against the guys who'd been around the program for so long. And I'm not even talking about, you know, like Grant or Jax, guys like Luke or Carson who'd been around 4 or 5 years, and you were part of passing along what it's like to be a leader to Luke. It seems that Luke kind of soaked it up like a sponge. It was easy to give him a hard time, though, as a freshman, wasn't it?
Oh, man, he was an easy target, and he did it to himself, and he knows that. Luke's a great guy to be around, and it's, I mean, if we need to laugh, it was Luke, you know. Luke was always there to lighten things up because, you know, times get tough and there's always pressure on, but Luke comes around and he lightens guys up, and it's all in the same way, you know, the way he led and everything like that was, you know, in a lighter way. But he also went about his business the right way. And so, like you said, I was a different kind of leader. You know, when I played, I was a little more, I guess, aggressive. But
I'd say you were pretty aggressive. Yes, right. I remember watching.
So, yeah, Luke was like on the other spectrum, you know. So him and I think that's why we were such good friends, you know. We balanced each other out a little bit. And, yeah, like you were talking about that team, that was so fun to watch, to see those young guys. And then, like you said, the vets, you know, the guys that have been there a while. It was incredible to watch. I was like, man, I wish I was on that field, you know, getting to see all those guys play together and the job they did. And as far as they got, that was amazing. It was great to see.
Guys, what's the biggest thing y'all learned from Dave Van Horn, you think?
You know, just take it a game at, or a day at a time, you know? I mean, for us, coming in as a new guy, you know, back in, what, 15, I was always like, if I would get out, I would always stress out and, you know, be really down on myself. But he's just like, you know what, like, chill out. Like, there's always another bat, another game, whatnot. And that really helped me down the road. I had a rough freshman year, and then I had a pretty good sophomore, junior, and senior year. So it really translated for me.
Well, and you can see. You mentioned that sophomore season. You had a good year individually. That was a tough year for the team. And I want to ask about what that season was like, and how maybe a lot of the guys that had returned for the 2 years after that, not used as motivation, but how did that 1 year missing not just the NCAA tournament, but also the SEC tournament, how did that help sort of form the team for the next 2 years in positive ways? Because there was a lot to learn from that season.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Carson and I were both guys that were able to come back after that rough season, who were draft eligible. And you know, we both had the opportunity to leave after that year, but it left a bad taste in our mouth. That was a frustrating year for the fans, for us, for everyone on the field, the coaching staff. And, you know, I think we underperformed a lot, and we were just ready to get back out there. And we had a pretty good year the next year. You know, we lost in regionals. We hosted a regional, but lost to Missouri State, and then you know, that kind of just fueled the fire even more for this past year.
Sorry, a little pause there. Guys, you mentioned freshman year. You talked about you like doing a lot of like looking at hitting videos and whatnot. We talked a lot of baseball, and I know you guys didn't have a lot of free time. But what was y'all's favorite part? I'm an Arkansas grad, too. What was your favorite part of attending the U of A outside of baseball? Because you had a lot of good memories in baseball, too.
I went ahead and mentioned it as soon as, you know, we started talking. It's just being back in the city, not even the city, being back in the state and seeing everybody wear Arkansas stuff. You know, you can't go anywhere without seeing somebody wearing Arkansas this, Arkansas that. And it's just a pride, you know. People take pride in going to school there and participating in the sports, and just the way the fans, you know, were behind us with everything. That was something amazing.
Yeah, me and my girlfriend were talking about the other day, like, I grew up in New Jersey. She grew up in Arkansas, you know, always wanted to go to the University of Arkansas, and I had no idea about the University of Arkansas until I got recruited here. And when I got here, it was outstanding. I fell in love with just the fans, the atmosphere, everything here. And, you know, I mean, I'll always stay around Fayetteville. I think, you know, that's probably where I want to lay my roots and stay around Fayetteville and, you know, call that my home.
So I never played baseball, a little background. I mean, I played soccer growing up. Phil's got a pretty deep, illustrious background in baseball. And I always josh with my friends. They always said hitting a baseball is the hardest thing to do in sports. You guys agree with that?
I think we're biased if we tell you yes.
But it's
but
fair.
I'm going to say yes. I think we have a fair argument. And the way I think about it is I've competed with some extremely athletic guys, you know. And I'm not going to make fun of soccer or anything else like that, because everybody that plays a sport professionally and does what they do, I think it's amazing. You know, just because of the dedication and hard work it takes to be, you know, high level at anything. But you get some incredible athletes, you throw them a baseball and it's like there's no chance. You know? And that's why it's something that Luke and I talked about so much, because we'd been playing for, I mean, I started playing it out since I was 3, you know, and at this time I'm 20 something years old, and so I'd been playing already for 15 plus years, and it's still something that it's hard to do on a consistent basis. So yeah, I'd have to agree with that.
Yeah, actually, when I was in high school at the IMG Academy in Florida, one of my good friends was Bo Scarborough, who was the running back at Alabama, and I think he's with Dallas right now. But I actually have a video on my Instagram way back down there, if you scroll down my timeline, of him. We're just hitting him front toss, or flipping him front toss, and he's taking some swings, and they're not great swings.
Whipping pretty good.
Yeah, but that dude was a freak athlete and just monstrous human being, and he was having struggle just hitting front toss, so it was pretty funny to see.
Just think about it, 60 feet 6 inches away, really closer because the pitcher is lunging towards the batter and letting it go, probably more like, you know, 53, 52 inches away, 95 miles an hour, maybe 3/10 of a second reaction time, and have it do it over and over and over. It's real. It is the toughest thing to do in all of sports. 1-1 deal. Bonfield, a high fly, left field, deep, back is Hibbler to the wall, and that's out of here! Luke Bonfield with a go-ahead home run!
I tell you what, he didn't miss that one, Phil. He left the fastball up, and Luke just absolutely crushed that ball to left field.
Let the Lukes rain down on Luke Bonfield. That was against Texas in the College World Series.
Yep. I was just telling Mike, I remember that exact home run right there, that exact call.
The count's 1-1. What was the pitch?
It was a fastball up. You know, the dude from Texas, you know, he was actually kind of giving us a little trouble all day long. He was like a sinker ball pitcher, you know, 90, 93 or so. And, you know, he just left the sinker up. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to put a good swing on it, and I didn't miss it.
Were you flipping off Clemens Sutton when you're going to the dugout? That's what I would have done.
Just before that, Heston had just pushed their first baseman down to the ground.
That's right. Okay.
And so I was running over there because I thought we were getting in a fight right there. I was ready. So I was running over there to back Heston up, and then the umpire comes over to me and he's like, "You take another step, you're ejected." And so I go back over, and then that ends up happening. That was pretty sweet, and I remember looking around, taking it all in, looking in the stands, all that.
You couldn't have done the horns down sign, or you would have gotten tossed. I don't know.
It wasn't a thing then. You could get away with it then. Now it's a problem. It wasn't then.
So I don't know if y'all, the Big 12 commissioner, Bob Bowlsby, came out before the Texas A&M Oklahoma football Big 12 championship and said if an Oklahoma player put the horns down, they would get a penalty for that. And Lincoln Riley and all these OU fans are like up in arms, and we're ticked off because Arkansas and Texas people hate each other. It's just like so stupid. But if they put a horns up, it's no penalty. But if you do it down.
God.
So. You know who else was ready to join the fight in case there was one? He would have jumped out of the booth. Bubba Carpenter was fit to be tied. I mean, I thought he was gonna jump out and go right at Kobe Clemons. I was floored. Do you even remember, Luke, what it felt like going around the bases? Because that was the first home run for Arkansas at the College World Series. The place is jammed. They're chanting your name. I'd imagine that's got to be one of those moments that you feel like you're floating around the bases. What was that like?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was talking to Mike about it the other day, and so when you hit a home run in college, like, it's pretty special, especially playing for Arkansas. You got, you know, 10,000 fans in the stands, but, you know, you kind of just do your thing. I was always a guy put my head down and jogged and just, you know, didn't really try and show up the pitcher, all that type of thing. But I hit it, and I knew I hit it pretty well. When I saw it go out, you know, I remember thinking to myself, hey, look around, enjoy the moment. Like, you know, this could be your last homer of your college career. And also, I mean, who gets to say they hit a home run in Omaha? I mean, that's right. So cool. Like, I'll be able to tell my kids about that one day. That'll probably be one of the coolest experiences in my baseball career.
Mike, you got there too as the shortstop for the 2015 team. You know, went two and out, but still, that doesn't lessen the enjoyment of what really is. As far as I'm concerned, I've been in college sports now for 15, 16 years. There's nothing like going to the College World Series. Whether it's two games or whether it's 16 days, like we were there in June, it really is. It is the best event, I think, in college sports. I'm biased, but for guys who played there, there's never anything to replace that.
No, absolutely not. And you know what, Phil? Growing up, I always wanted to play college baseball way more than I want to play professionally. You know, I remember watching, you know, guys play at Rosenblatt growing up, and I said, that's me. Like, that's what I want to do. And I got to say I did it. You know, that's literally a lifelong dream of mine, was to be able to play in the College World Series, and I got to experience it with a great group of guys, a group of guys that, you know, on paper probably shouldn't have been there, but we could talk about that season too, you know, being 15-15 at one point and not losing a series after that. So it was a great experience, and like Luke says, it's something you can tell your kids about, and great experience.
All right, so you mentioned that a little bit. You guys didn't feel like that was just kind of a weird season for you guys. You guys go to Stillwater, beat Oklahoma State in that regional. Talk about that whole atmosphere, the fact that they wouldn't let the Big Spoon in the stadium, and you guys were able to just win that regional.
Now, remember, Mike started his career at Oklahoma State, so that had a little extra oomph for him.
Extra oomph.
That was about to be a fun fact. So I did go to Oklahoma State at a high school, redshirted there. Was told I wasn't good enough to go back, so I ended up going to JUCO. Played a year and then found my way here to Arkansas. And when I found out our regional was going through Stillwater, I was so excited. And, we had a great regional. Our fans traveled like no other. I don't know if Luke remembers this, but we had the entire crowd wearing red. Yep. To the point, like we just said, you couldn't take a spoon in there. We had Spoon on the team, and we had fans carry a big old silver spoon and scream his name walking up to the plate, and they didn't even let us take it in there.
And then Missouri State has to come play at Baum Stadium because of the whole... It was in a minor league team that was playing during their park at that time.
Yep.
How convenient was that for you guys getting to play at Baum Stadium in a super regional y'all shouldn't have been hosting?
Well, it was convenient because we had 13,000 people wearing red calling the Hogs after Ben Attendee's homers. It was amazing. It was a great experience.
Game one was when y'all crushed them, and then game two was kind of a pitcher's duel where they kind of took over.
Matt Hall, that dude.
Cruised.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I loved when him and Ben, like, he struck Ben Attendee out, or it was a fly ball or something, and they're just jawing at each other. And we asked both of them after the game, so what'd y'all say? No, nothing.
Nothing.
We're just talking.
We're just pretending.
Well, he came on, if you remember, he went on the... like the before game press conference or whatever before the series.
That's right.
And he was like, they're like, how will the 13,000 fans affect you pitch? And he's like, they won't affect me at all. And like he was kind of cocky, like he was a cocky dude. Great. And but I mean, dang, could he pitch? And he shoved that game.
Yeah,
but
did.
You know, we ended up coming on.
Yeah, they forced a game three, and then game three came around. And you know what? It was 3 games in 3 days. We do that all year, you know? It's a 3-game series every weekend. But that game three, all the 2 games before that were hot as can be. So many emotions. That game three felt like, when we won that game, it was like I just got done, I don't know, trekking the jungle for days without a meal. It was incredible. We were all so tired and so excited.
Winning isn't everything. It's the only thing. You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.